All right, let's do it. So I was trying to think of what I can talk about that's different than something I've said before, and at the same time, hammer in the same points. You know, it's good to revisit ideas when you know they're worthy. And I started thinking about today's about counter economics, right? And Brandon was giving some ideas. John's talking about kind of manifesting what you want and entrepreneurship. And Wisate earlier was talking about Hanami and his ideas on how to redesign the economic system. What I want to talk about, what I've been noticing, is there's this, I see this interrelation between spiritual exchange and economic exchange, right? So let's define those terms first. When I think about economics, outside of, you know, books and things that make you fall asleep because it's really boring or it just doesn't appeal to most people, economics, as important as it is, I'm specifically thinking about how every single action you take is actually an economic action of one kind or another. So just as an example, right now you are choosing to be here right now and take in this information and sit with each other and learn with each other, as opposed to going somewhere else, you know, going to work to make money, for example, or just anything, whatever it might be. The point is that every decision you make is going to affect the things that come into your life, the relationships you build, all this sort of information. So even when money is not exchanged at all, it doesn't always mean that money has to be exchanged for something to be economic. It's all economic decisions. The choices you make, where you live, the people you hang out with, those are economic choices, right? And I also notice that in spiritual conscious communities, sometimes there is an aversion, I think, to money, or to feel like, oh, we can't be happy about making money and supporting ourselves doing the things we love. It's kind of like we, you know, we have to talk about it, like, oh, I don't really want money. Or, but I noticed that there's a, it's this idea that it's an exchange, right? That money is, at the end of it, it's a piece of paper that I'm handing to somebody saying, you did something for me that we agreed to, and here's a piece of paper that represents that. And other people have agreed that they'll take that piece of paper so you can buy clothes. You know, that's basically what it comes down to. But at the end of the day, it is an energy exchange, right? So when you think about that in terms of exchanging money, barter, just physically trading labor, one thing for the other, all of those are energetic exchanges as much as they are economic exchanges. Does that make sense to everybody? So when I think about that, we're going to mainly focus on the spiritual side today, and how spirituality, I think, and what does that really even mean, connects to this idea of the counter economy. Before I can get to that point, though, I want to talk about the actual economic side of things. And I want to define, as I mentioned earlier, the term the counter economy. So this man named Samuel Edward Konkin III, he was an activist in the 60s, 70s, 80s, up until the time of his death in 2004. But in the mid 60s, when you had the Black Power movements and the women's rights movement and the Red Power movements and the hippies and the anti-war movements, there was also the beginning of what is pretty much the modern libertarian American libertarian movement. And Konkin was a student at that time, and he was very active in these circles. And he was seeing that politics weren't, like, even back then, 50, 60 years ago, people like us, many of us here, we're already realizing politics isn't going to save us. You know, that's just it. To me, it's just a wasted of energy and game, and it's also a system that doesn't give you a choice, because one way or the other, you're born into that system. And they say, well, whether you voted for this person or not, they get to make decisions about your life. And I don't know, it just doesn't seem right to me. I don't know, maybe I'm crazy. So when we have systems like that, which are imposed upon us, Konkin saw that you really have no choices. And he didn't think that politics could really achieve a state of a free humanity. And in his words, he called this future destination that we might get to the agora. And that word comes from the Greek word for marketplace. That's what it means, is the marketplace. So he saw it as this marketplace of ideas where we could exchange goods, we could exchange ideas, community. And essentially, it's just this space that we, you know, like we're creating here. I like to call these kinds of things temporary autonomous agoras, because we just pop up, we're here for a few days, we're exchanging goods, ideas, community, and then we're gone. You know, some of them are more permanent, some of them are temporary. So he didn't see politics as the answer. And he also didn't think that storming the Capitol was going to fix anything. He wasn't for insurrection or political violence, not only because he thought that to impose violence on other people is immoral, unethical, impractical, much like myself as an anarchist do believe that using force, coercion, violence on another person is immoral, unethical, whether it's illegal or not. And even if you're not physically doing that force, but maybe you're voting for a government to do that force, that doesn't make it right either. So he recognized that, and he thought, well, even if I'm trying to fight for other people's freedom and liberty, I can't impose it on them. I can't force people to be free. You know, you can't force somebody to wake up. You can't force somebody to care about themselves. Instead, you can share information, you can educate them. And so with that in mind, he didn't think the idea of an imposed insurrection, let's just overthrow the current leaders and then we'll put our system in place, right? Because we'll be the good guys. We promise this time. No, he didn't see any of those solutions as viable. So he didn't believe in violence and he didn't believe in voting. And so most people would say, well, then you're out of choices, right? The only other thing left to do is just be apathetic and stay home and complain on Facebook. Konkin envisioned a third way, what he called counter-economics. And counter-economics was his strategy for how to get to that agora, that free place where we can exchange ideas, goods, values, and build community on these principles. And counter-economics describes the counter-economy, or sometimes known as the informal economy. It's also been called System D. If you start looking up this research, it's actually, there's a lot of information out there. The counter-economy, as Konkin described it, was the economy that exists outside of the state's hands. And that state could be the United States government, it could be the Mexican government, it could be the Dutch government, just generally. A state, a government, they tax their people, they impose those taxes at birth, as I said earlier, you don't have a choice. Those things are all just sort of, what's the joke? Like, two things are consistent, death and taxes, right? It's like born into the culture, just accept it. You don't get away from it, it's always there. That's what they want you to believe, that there's no way outside of that system. But Konkin was offering a way outside, and he said, look at this, look at parts of the world, including Mexico. Parts of the world outside of the so-called first world, they exist in the counter economy, in the informal economy. You see it all around Mexico. You see people who start up restaurants or businesses or sell food on the side of the road or wash windows or do whatever. These are entrepreneurs, like the young boy we had here, just coming here to hustle his product. These are entrepreneurs. The government would say, well, you owe us taxes on those goods. You can't just sell things without permission. What do you think? You're free? You have to pay taxes on this. You got to file paperwork. You got to get licenses, permission slips. That's what it comes down to. And Konkin, so that's what Konkin would call the white market, the mainstream economy that is the taxed, documented. If you got a check, there's the FIC insurance and the Social Security coming out, all that. There's a record of what you're doing. That's the white market, the mainstream economy. The counter economy then is the black and the gray markets. And Konkin believed in the non-aggression principle. And again, the idea that we are all free, powerful, beautiful people who own ourselves and are capable of making our own decisions. It is wrong, immoral, unethical for me to force my will on you. He believed in that. So when he's talking about black and gray market, he wasn't describing anything violent or, you know, like murders. People hear black market, they think like mobsters and crazy things like that. He actually had a word for that. Violent and illegal activity, he called the red market. But activity that is technically illegal, or the government would prefer you get a permit for that or a license, that would be considered the black and the gray market. And he said, look, there's huge strength in here. If you look outside of America, you look into the so-called third world, you see that most of the people live outside of the informal economy. They live in the informal economy and the counter economy. And there's some great examples of this you can find in the late Soviet Union, because the more corrupt and authoritarian the government gets, the larger the black market gets, because even the people who are on the payroll, they're going to the black market to make sure they get extra food for their family, right? And even today in China, in one of the most oppressive places in the world, or let's say North Korea, people still funnel in USBs of information, you know, through the black market. They still bring in like different goods. No matter what the states do, they cannot stop free people from interacting. And I think that is going to be our saving grace, is that no matter what they've done through history, the counter economy thrives. And you know what another example of the counter economy is, to bring it maybe a little more relevant? A counter economy exchange would be you meeting somebody and them saying, hey, I have a negative PCR test, so you can fly home from Mexico and you don't have to stick that thing up your nose. And you say, hey, I have a few bucks, and you make an exchange, and there's no need for any third party government, corporation, or anybody else outside of that to have anything to do with that. That's the counter economy right there. That's agorism in action. And that's one of the reasons I spent so much time writing about it in my books about agorism and kind of putting my ideas on it, is because more and more I see that the things that Konkin was writing about, they're happening. Like right now, we are in the early stages of the things he predicted, where these pockets of free economies would start to pop up, and that the more aggressive the government gets, the more people are going to want to exit. And we're just starting to see that mass exodus. And we don't have all the answers yet, but we're building it. I mean, that's the crazy thing, is we get to be the ones to build it. I mean, I find that to be empowering. Like, I think we are probably alive in the most historic time ever. Maybe everybody feels like that, but I feel like it's definitely a powerful time that we're dealing with some unprecedented things, and we get to decide the direction it goes. Does that not fill you with empowerment as much as dread and anxiety and, oh my God, what are we going to do? But it's in our hands. Take a moment to recognize that, guys. We have the power to influence the direction of the world. This is what this event is about, the Greater Reset, that we get to create that. And I invite you to learn more about the counter economy and what that means. Like I said, the talk's not focused on that, but I want you to understand what counter economics is about. That's the idea, is that you find ways to avoid permits and avoid taxes when possible and do as much of your exchanges in, say, precious metals or barter networks or crypto, non-trackable, Monero and others, crypto, and things like that. Or just like I said, trading value directly. Hey, I'll give you this and you can do this for me in exchange. There's no reason to have a record of that. There's no reason any government has a say over that. And if you have a way to avoid paying taxes, please stop paying taxes now so they can stop funding wars around the world. A lot of these crazy pictures online of people being blown up and churches being bombed and stuff, those are U.S. bombs made by U.S. taxpayers. You're being extorted. I'm not blaming you, but any opportunity you have to get out of that system, be proud of it. That's what Conklin was trying to do, is build a conscious movement of people who recognize that there is strength outside of their systems. Instead of aspiring to be inside their systems and, oh, look at my license, look at my diploma, now I'm accepted, now I'm one of them, now I can live this life that they have put before us, recognize that we have an opportunity to create something completely new and completely different. We get to decide the path that lays before us and where it goes. So agorism is alternative currencies. It's alternative food production. You know, that's counter economics. That's that whole area, right? And that's the physical realm of it. And that is absolutely important. Please, like, I have my books online for free. If you want to learn more about it, you can download them at theconsciousresistance.com. Visit there, check out the books, learn more about these ideas and see how they can apply to your life. It's going to be different in every area and every community, every individual. So that's our exchange in the physical realm. What about our exchange in the spiritual realm, in the, let's say, the world beyond the five senses, ethereal, whatever words we want to use. The world beyond the five senses is a good way to say it. The world beyond the physical. Because I don't know how all you guys feel, but I've had a lot of interesting experiences over the last 36 years that have shown me that there's something going on beyond my understanding. Can't quite claim to know what it is. I call it Creator. I give thanks for every moment I have, every breath, for each one of you. Not claiming to understand it, but I know it, and I trust it, and I feel it. And I do know that there is an exchange that happens. Like right now, I can see your beautiful eyes and faces looking at me. You're giving me your energy, your attention, and I appreciate that. And I'm trying to make the most use of your time and share something that's valuable. We are having an exchange right now. There's a connection going on right now, right? And everybody at home who's listening. So the exchanges we make in the counter economy aren't only physical goods being traded. But it's our relationships. It's the way we communicate with each other. It's the way that we empower or we hold each other back, right? Anybody familiar with the book, The Four Agreements or The Fifth Agreement as well? Yeah, beautiful books, right? And one of the wonderful pieces of information there is just the simple reminder that our words are like magic. They can be black magic. They can be poison. They can harm. They can break somebody down. They can tear people down. They can really maybe make them, you know, not like themselves. Or they can uplift, they can empower, they can help somebody recognize that they have what they need within themselves to achieve their goals. That's important to remember when we're having these energetic exchanges, because we're humans and part of this human experience is some other thing in there that I don't claim to understand, but we like to call it ego. And every now and then it wants to tell you that you need to be right, you need to be in charge here, you need to make sure you're heard, and why aren't they listening to me, and all the different emotions that are important to acknowledge and important to be aware of that we each have. There's all these things going on. There's this connect. There's a physical realm and how we interact with people face to face. And there's also the way we're feeling inside. And there's that emotional sort of spiritual connection. And within all that, there's also this concept, this psychological concept that I write about in my book, The Holistic Self-Assessment. So I'll tell you about that. When I went to prison in 2005, I was 20 years old. I was addicted to crystal meth and I got locked up, and I come from a family of drug addicts and alcoholics, and you visited my father in prison my whole early life, and it was just, oh well, here I am, you know, doing that whole thing. I went down that road for a good while, and I ended up doing 18 months behind bars in Texas state institutions between 2005 and 2008. And I got out, and I had this renewed kind of love for life that I forgot that I like to learn, I like to read. I felt like for the first time in my life I might be able to say, I love myself. Holy crap, that was hard. And it was this journey, though, getting there. And this journey is what I did while I was locked up in prison. And I started asking myself, how the hell did I get here? How did I get in this situation where I'm like making the same mistakes as this dude that I've been so angry at all my life? How could I get here? And I went through the trauma and started meditating, did a lot of different processes. And I think that that's what I call the holistic self-assessment, whatever you want to call it, that internal check-in, shadow work, there's different names for it, is so important. It is so important because I will say I met so many beautiful people while I was locked up in prison, intelligent, bright people who should be out here doing good things for people instead of being locked in cages. And some of them, they figured it out before I did. They never went back. They got their shit together. They figured out what it was they were needing, that they were dealing with. Because even though I don't support the prison system, the fact of the matter is most people who are feeling good inside don't shove drugs up their nose and in their mouths all day long. Unless, you know, if you're happy, you don't really feel the need to do that. You also don't go out and break in people's houses and do different things. You know, sometimes poverty, but generally you're not doing these things if you're already a happy person, right? So there is trauma there, but the institution isn't equipped to help people. But I took it upon myself to help myself. But I saw other people who are still cycling out of those systems right now. Some of the people I met in there are dead because they didn't figure out whatever they were dealing with, including my father, who died from a drug overdose 3 years ago through this summer. And I realized that I need to get through that healing. I needed to have that healing, right? In order for me to exist in this world, in order to begin this journey that I am on now, 15 years after getting out of prison, 12 years, I had to go through that stuff in order to learn all my darkness and to see my darkness. And I'm not going to, you know, bullshit you that like when I got out of prison, everything was just like, it was just perfect all the time after that. There's been a lot more lessons since then, but it's been such a beautiful journey. And it started with that. It started with this really ugly experience of going to prison, feeling completely alone, completely powerless, and then deciding that I had to do everything I could to make sure that I figured out why I was there. And it was this process of taking myself through that. And part of that, I'll just give you a couple examples of it. Part of it, what became what I call the holistic self-assessment, was first understanding, who am I? Real simple, but really big question, right? I mean, there's a million ways you can go about describing that, right? Can I hear from the audience a couple of examples, just and as simple as possible, maybe one word. I know that's really difficult, but who are you? Energy. Consciousness. Hey, you guys are giving better answers than I did. Okay, so because sometimes maybe we have an enlightened crowd. I think we do have here. But some folks, when you ask that question, right, they're like, oh, I'm a teacher, right? Like, no, that's your profession. But who are you? It's like, well, they say their name or something. It's difficult to really start getting that. Like, what is the root of you? Not the clothes you're wearing, not the faces you're putting out in front of there, not your social media, not your job title or any of that stuff. But who are you just as a human, naked human being, free, sitting there existing? Getting to the root of that takes some time. And I think it's an ongoing question, right? We're evolving. Hopefully we always evolve. We continue to grow. We never stay static. I'm not interested in becoming a static human being. I want to keep learning. And as I was answering that question, who am I? How did I get here? Then from there, I go into what are the principles that guide you, right? You get to learn a little bit about who you are. You get some self-identity. Then in order to move about in the world appropriately, you need to know what your principles are, because principles are like your kind of North Star. It's something that you refer back to. So as I mentioned earlier, ideas like self-ownership and the non-aggression principle. I try to make sure that all the actions I have with other people, am I coercing this person? Am I using violence on them? Like, okay, I got to find a better solution, right? That goes against the core beliefs that I have. Another one is a 7-generation principle that I've mentioned before. The idea that we need to live in a way that helps and empowers the 7 generations and beyond. The people, the beautiful young ones here are the next generation, right? And then their children and beyond and beyond. How are the things we're doing today as we're facing this great reset? What is the world they're going to go into look like? We get to determine that. So start thinking that way every day, thinking about how your actions are affecting the 7 generations and beyond, right? And there's a few other principles that are core to me, but the idea is, who am I? Getting to know yourself. What are the principles that you have? What is a principle? Some people don't even really, we kind of have that word in our head, but if you stopped and think, well, what is a principle? What does that really mean? And what are my principles? And then from there, start to identify goals that you have, right? Because as you're getting to know yourself and as you're getting to understand the principles that you have, you start to, before you get to goals, you start to examine your habits as well and your relationships. And again, it's all about aligning your world holistically. So maybe you're good at speaking publicly and sharing these ideas, but then in your private life, you don't actually live them. You know, maybe it's just a kind of a face you put on, right? That's one of the concepts that we talk about, the psychological concept that everybody has kind of a stage that we go on, right? And we're prepping ourselves to go on stage when we're in front of other people. It's not like a bad thing. It's just something that we do as humans. We have a backstage, you know, where we go back there and we're totally alone. You're just completely yourself. Maybe you got one other person that you can be on that backstage with. But typically, we got to kind of prep ourselves. Like, okay, now I'm ready to go out and talk to people. And now I'm presenting myself. And it doesn't have to be like you're being fake. It's just part of who we are. The goal, though, or at least for me, is how do we align what's happening backstage with what's happening up front stage, where we feel so good about who we are and the energy we're putting forth, the exchanges and the things we have to offer, that we don't have to put on a facade when we go out in front stage, that they're pretty much exactly the same. Or maybe there is no more backstage. It's just you're always here I am. I'm on stage. This is me, whether you love me or not. Right. And maybe it's such an empowering thing to recognize. I've realized this over the years. Creating containers like this, because I hope everybody who's here, everybody who's watching at home, and everybody in Central Texas realizes that you are accepted. No matter how old you are, what color you are, what age you, whatever, you're accepted. We accept you. And we want to get to know you. And so you have a container right now to say, you know what, I don't need backstage. I'm going to just be full me, front stage, in front of everybody, and see what comes about that. See how people are attracted, or what I learned through that experience and what it teaches me about myself. Just think about how empowering that would be if the only thing we did after this conference, after this activation, is that everybody decided to be a little bit more real. That might ripple out to the world in some very powerful ways, because being real means speaking up when someone tells you to put a mask on and you, well, now it's not worth it. I'll just be quiet, or I'll just comply. You don't have to be rude, but you assert your truth, right? And not just about these kinds of issues, but just everything, right? You realize that you don't have to hide who you really are from your family and your friends anymore. You realize that you don't have to just smile and be nice just because you don't want to create a fight. It also doesn't mean you have to be rude to people, but you just stand strong in your truth. This is who I am. I got to know myself. I know my principles. I know now that my habits are in line with my principles. Because as I said earlier, if you're not really living the message, then your habits are going to get out of alignment. So then you've got like this principle that you claim to live by. But then in your daily habits, you're living a completely opposite life. Like you're like, man, down with the Federal Reserve. All right, guys, I got to go work at Goldman Sachs. I'll see you later. There's a little of inconsistency there. And those inconsistencies are what hold us back and what limit us as a species and on the individual level, right? It's not about being like harsh on yourself, like, damn, look, you're totally out of alignment. You claim these things, but you still got your money in the banks. We all have different situations. I'm not here to judge anybody. I'm here to say, let's as individuals take an honest look at ourselves and say, is there more work that I can do? Can I actually move the ball forward in some ways? I've been wanting to look into local credit unions as a better alternative to banks, but I just haven't taken the time. I've been wanting to learn about how to grow my own food, but I'm just posting memes about it and hoping that somehow food's going to grow. You know, that's the sort of thing that we do, right? There's a disconnect in our actions, and it's not about me or anybody else judging you. It's about, let's just be real. Let's see what we're facing. Trillions of dollars of maybe hundreds of years of planning to create this thing they're calling the Great Reset. Has everybody really taken the scope of what the heck we're facing, right? But also there's so much beauty and so much creation and so much imagination on our side. It's just we have to follow through, because the intentions are great, but they're nothing without action, right? And so you might have that intention to, oh, I'm headed to the Greater Reset and I got to get my beach body ready. So I'm going to go to the beach. I'm going to go to the gym 5 times a week and make sure I'm looking good and feeling good, more importantly. But in reality, your actions are playing video games all day and eating pizza. There's a disconnect between your actions and your goal, right? And in the same way, if we want to combat this greater reset thing, and we want to create the great reset, and we want to create a greater reset, and we want to grow healthy food, and we want the kids to have good, clean water, but we're not doing anything, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen without action. And that's both internal healing, trauma, working through that, getting to know yourself, and yes, exploring the physical counter economy, exploring the ideas that you're hearing this week that align with your principles, discovering what your principles are, discovering what your goals are, looking at your habits, looking at your relationships, and seeing where you might be out of alignment. And it's up to you to decide how you go about that situation. Maybe I'll give an example. I met a couple a few years ago. They came to another event I was speaking at back in the day called the Free Your Mind Conference. And they came 1 year and just got totally blown away. And then they came back the following year and then they wanted to share this story. And the story was like, wow, we came here. We were just totally moved by all the information we heard. And when we went back home to wherever, we realized like nothing was the same. The woman was working for the Department of Defense, specifically helping sell missiles from the U.S. government to other nations, like she was kind of being real about this. And she said, when I went back to work, I couldn't do it anymore. I realized that I was contributing to the system that I'm trying to fight and that I don't agree with and that doesn't align with my values. And she said, but I had no way out. And what she was saying is, like, one of the ways they sucker you in, and I think a lot of people might relate to this, is through, she had like this pension that was off in the distance. If she just got to that, everything's good. And she's got health care and they're paying for all this stuff. And that's really hard to walk away from. And I empathize with that. I've never had those things, but I empathize with people who feel that security it's a carrot they got on a stick and they're waiting for you to grab it. And she said she just couldn't figure out how to get out of it. She knew that she didn't love it anymore. She was miserable every day and she was praying about it. And then her mom ended up passing away, which was obviously difficult for her. And she had no idea that her mom had a stash of money that she had kind of secretly, I guess, hidden away until this time. And in her will, gave this woman the money, which was enough money for her to quit her job. And they came back to the conference and they were just like, I have no idea what we're going to do. We have this money for now, but I'm happier than I've ever been because I'm living my truth. And that's what we all need to do. I mean, that's just, to me, is so empowering. And I just want to shout out my brother Andy back there. Andy, I'm going to put you on the spot for the people here in the audience. Andy, I'm just going to briefly tell your story, and you can be embarrassed if you like it. Andy is an ex-Marine who got out of the Marines as a conscientious objector, and now he's here at the Greater Reset because he realized the things that he was being forced to participate in didn't align with his values. And I have the utmost respect for people who take a stand in that way. All politics aside, it's just about, again, living your truth. And some of you might hate that decision. Others will applaud it and love it. But he's living who he needs to be, and that's what matters, right? And if more of us did that, that would change the world alone. If we all just started being real and stopped feeling like we have to blow smoke up people, places, and not be our real selves. So that's what I was doing in prison, and that's this process that I'm describing. I think that when you talk about this self-assessment, whatever way you go about it, if you like the ideas I have, use them. If you find other books and things that work better, use them. The point is that we need to explore the tools that can help us connect to ourselves, whether it's yoga, whether it's sound bath, whether it's meditation, it's prayer, time with community, just crying your eyes out, whatever it is that brings you to that place where you get the healing that you need to. That makes us more equipped, more healthy, spiritually, mentally, physically, to exchange with people, right? Because like I was saying earlier, it's not just the physical exchanges. I'm trading gold or silver, we're trading crypto, or I'm buying food from him, whatever it may be. But it's also the way that we're interacting with people, right? Because you can be a Bitcoin millionaire and haven't done any of your work and you're a complete dick and nobody likes you. And they're probably not going to do business with you still. I'm just saying, we got to work on ourselves inside as much as anywhere else. And this concept is something that I've started to call in the last couple of years. For those who are familiar with my work, my website and the book series is called The Conscious Resistance, and it's still a phrase I use, but more recently I've started to call it holistic activism, or if you're an anarchist, holistic anarchism. And what I mean by this is, again, just taking that holistic look, right? So as a typical activist, you might go out to the streets and you protest the Federal Reserve, or you protest against Monsanto, or let's say you protest the lockdowns or whatever it may be. But again, you're not always thinking about the role that you're playing. You're just pointing, it's Monsanto, it's the Rockefellers, it's Bill Gates. I know it's them. I have no role in this at all. And you're pointing your fingers out there. You're not pointing the finger back here and looking at your own actions. And sometimes this results in hypocritical, contradictory behavior. Like maybe you're against the Federal Reserve System, but you still use it every day and you haven't made any effort to get out of that system. You're against the Wall Street banks, but you're putting your money in their banks. Little inconsistencies like that, right? So in one hand, you're going on the streets and saying, change the world, let's fix these problems. But then you go back and you shoot yourself in the foot by contributing to that same problem. That is what looks like a reactive type of activism. A holistic activism says, how do I examine this problem and see that, yes, I'm upset. I want to go outside and express my voice. I want to pass out some information, cheer, talk to people like we're going to do this afternoon. But also, let me stop and reflect. You know what? I've been buying from companies that work with Monsanto. I buy products that are Monsanto GMO corn. I'm working against myself in this instance, right? Like, just look at the problems that you see, because it's easy to look around and see problems. It's a lot harder to look at ourselves and see how we're feeding into them, to humble ourselves and say, wow, like, you know what? I'm playing a role. It doesn't mean you need to shame yourself. It doesn't mean you need to like feel overwhelmed or there's nothing you can do. It's about starting to think, well, what's the first step I can take? How can I start to move away from that system, right? Because I've been doing this for 12 years now, not paying taxes, not using banks, and just staying out of their system as much as possible. And it takes time and it's difficult and it's not necessarily for everyone. So I'm not asking people to live my lifestyle, but I am saying let's start being a lot more real about what we believe in and aligning our actions, our words, and our thoughts. So it starts up here and that's great. And maybe it turns into a meme, but without action, it means nothing ultimately. You know, we can have a lot of good thoughts. We have a lot of good intentions here. There's so many people who've been coming up and sharing all the projects they have going on. There's a lot of exchange, a lot of momentum here in this room and all around the world right now. But if we don't put action behind it, and that action includes taking our money out of their systems, building better food production systems, healing ourselves, working through our trauma, trying to find the root causes of those things, and trying to present to the world this empowered human being. Because we're never going to be perfect, but we can definitely get to a place where we can be real, we can heal, and then again, we can create that container for other human beings to be free. Because when we allow another human being to feel like they can just practically be their real selves, that is so empowering. I mean, how many times in our lives have we had to, maybe in different relationships with your parents or certain friends, especially in our younger years, I feel like, put on a facade because people, it was just going to cause trouble. Just the idea of you being you was going to cause trouble. It would cause a fight at dinner if you just be your real self when you come home to see your family or something like that. Those are real situations that people deal with, and that is a completely disempowering feeling to feel like you can't just be yourself by people that you're supposed to, you know, love you and care about, and people that you love and care about. So the more spaces we can create where people can be free, people can be real, they can feel open to coming out on front stage as their true self and not having to put on a facade, and you can look them in the eyes and make that real human connection and say, I accept you. I want to know more about you. Let's get to know each other. When we have counter-economic exchanges that are empowered in that way because we're doing our spiritual healing, our trauma healing, then our exchanges in the physical realm are only going to be that much stronger, right? Because there's a layer of trust that needs to happen, especially if you're talking about doing things outside of the system. You need to trust the people you're dealing with. So as I wrap up here, when I think about that, building trust with people, and am I making sense here? Are you guys, sometimes I just go on, so I don't know. So when I'm talking about the physical, economic, real-world exchanges, and again, empowering ourselves, healing so that those exchanges we have are equally powerful, I do think there's a layer of trust. And that leads to, we need to trust the people we're working with, right? Whether that's, it's your family, it's your friends, it's your husband, your wife, or it's the community you live in. We're a community right here. You know, that word gets thrown out around a lot, but let's give a few examples of community. This is a community right here, the people in this room. There's also an international, worldwide community of people who have join the Greater Reset Activation, following our channels, and who are watching right now, and people who are going to be watching it later in the weeks and months to come. There's a community in Austin, you know, there's the global community, international community of people who are waking up to these things, right? It means a lot of different things. But when you're building community, whether it's these sort of temporary autonomous agoras or it's intentional community, like I said, we want to have a conversation this week with people who are interested in Mexico or elsewhere of starting communities built around different principles. That's where you can really have the counter economy thrive. Because if you've got a group of people, whether that's maybe a freedom cell of 7 or 8 people or multiple freedom cells or multiple families living together, you're going to start building trust in those relationships, knowing that you can exchange value with those people, that you can connect to them on a spiritual plane as well, that you can be your real self with them. That's where I think that the strength is. And whether, like Johnny was talking a couple of days ago in Houston about building in the city, or you're talking about moving to the Mexican countryside or in the US or wherever, the point is that we need community. We need to build these strong connections. And this is what Samuel Konkin, the dude who discovered agorism and counter economics, this is what he believed would happen, is that as the state got more and more aggressive and oppressive and authoritarian, as we're seeing around the world right now in the response to COVID-19 that they're pulling, more and more people are waking up. How many people have seen friends and family who may have never questioned? How many of you maybe woke up in the last year? Maybe some people here are just having that journey. But if any of you had that experience in the last year of friends and family who never seemed concerned about these issues, starting to look to you because they know you're the crazy one. So they want to come to you. Hey, what do you think about this? They're like, you know, they know that they can come to you. Some of you have had that experience, right? I've been noticing that in my work, a lot more people reaching out and saying, I just woke up 6 months ago. I just woke up last month. You know, just people are constantly having this experience now. And that's what Konkin predicted, is that as the state got more oppressive and aggressive, it would cause more people to have this kind of questioning, waking up experience. And I believe those of us who are here now and who see it, we can choose to be forward thinking, and we can lay the foundation, this network of free communities, or as I like to call them, conscious agoras. That's the name of the community that we're trying to build out in Michoacan. And hopefully, if things go well, we will be getting the land by the beginning of July and start the building of the first Conscious Agora. But I want this to be a network, an international, worldwide network. Thank you. Of free communities that are trading counter-economically, that are focused on healing, that are living lives of non-aggression and respecting each other's self-ownership and individuality, but also using the power of us as a group, right? And then on an international scale, just like we've done already with the Freedom Cell Network, connecting all these communities. So we have a grid of alternative communities all around the world who, when they try to lock us out, and unfortunately, friends, they are going to try to lock us out with these immunity passports to travel, to work, to use the bank accounts. This is a reality. I know we're here for solutions, but this is a reality we need to recognize. Doesn't mean you can't fight, but it's right there staring you in the face. When they try to lock you out, you won't be dependent on their food system, their healthcare system, their banks, or any things like that. But the sooner you get out, the more we build now, spiritually and physically, the better off we will be. Because if we don't, again, we're failing the seven generations. Thank you, guys. Can we do the affirmation before I exit stage?
Yeah, sure. Yep. Hey, right, that was great, bros. You were in flow mode there, just riffing and nailing
Thank you.
It.
Thank Good. You. Guys.
Give it
Thank
up
you.
Again. Give it up.
I hope so. I just blacked out and I woke up and everybody was clapping, so I hope I did good.
That's the true stream of consciousness.
Let's start with beautiful, powerful, and then free. All right. I am beautiful.
I am beautiful.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
I am free.
I am free.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
In 2021, the free hearts and minds of the world are standing together in celebration of freedom and community.
The people are waking and organizing. The people are recognizing their own power.
The people of the world are uniting against the Great Reset.
The people are celebrating the Greater Reset.
From May 24th to 28th, join us as we gather online and in person for the Greater Reset. From activation to expansion.
Over 5 days, we will focus on practical solutions for the most pressing issues of our time. Over 30 world-class speakers will share ideas in 5 different themes. May 24th, Mind, Body, and Soul.
May 25th, Regenerate the Earth.
May 26th, The Counter Economy.
May 27th, Liberating Technology.
May 28th, Community and Relationships. Don't miss out on the next step in the Greater Reset. It's time to get activated.
This is our world,
our way.